We are continuing our first edition of our 2026 redraft wide receiver rankings. Quick reminder, season pass live right now. You can get all of these rankings as we go through them. So this is where we left off, Danny. We had Pickens, Higgins, Neighbors, Zay Flowers, those types of guys. We've done some shuffling of our rankings and the tiers and whatnot. We did have a couple more guys kind of join this tier that make up more so of the like the mid-round receivers. Like, we're starting to get into the range here where you're talking about mid-third round, late third round, early fourth round type of players. So we have Chris Olave, Emeka Egbuka, Jalen Waddle, and Davante Adams. You guys are going to notice as we're going through this that the numbers are a little bit off. We're, you know, working behind the scenes with the devs to do that. We'll swap between this view and that view so you can see kind of in the order of the numbers versus the actual physical tier list. But I'll let you start us off, Danny, with Chris Olave, because a lot of people were mad that he wasn't in the last video.
So full transparency, I'll let you talk about the cons part of it, because I actually did have him ranked in the next tier. So the way my tier currently works is I had it as Pickens, Smith, Olave at 13, Neighbors, Flowers, and Higgins. So I'm higher on Olave overall. I understand your concern in terms of he's dealing with potential blood clotting issues. We don't really know about the full capacity of his physical health at this point. And they did add some significant target competition. You take a first-round receiver in the top 10. You also take a tight end who I was extremely high on with Oscar Delp. So there could be more target competition for Olave. Really, when I look at Olave, he just feels like a guy that you can get on base with, a guy that if you take in the third round and the fourth round, you could pretty much easily project for 14 and a half plus points per game. It's just my question mark. Does he get back up to the 16 and a half? Does he get back up to the top 10, top 12 receiver he was last year? I guess your take on that could just frankly be how involved Tyson is right away.
Yeah, I think most people are going to do this. They're going to go, when you look at the games with Tyler Shuck, he was an 18-point-per-game receiver, which I think it's a little dangerous to do with Chris Olave, just because of, like you said, Bryce Lance, Jordan Tyson, Oscar Delp, all added to the situation. I don't believe, we've talked about this on numerous occasions, that Tyler Shuck will be nearly as good as he was last year. I think he'll have a little bit of a sophomore slump, regress a little bit. And the other thing, too, is like Chris Olave just packed so much of that production into those playoff weeks where it mattered so much for fantasy players when that point production came that I think we remember him so, so fondly. And again, there's no question in my mind that he's going to go up in my rankings, assuming he's totally cleared for training camp. He is right now my wide receiver 19. He'll definitely be closer to 15 or 16, I would imagine, by the time training camp gets here and he's fully cleared. I just do have some concern that you have significantly more target competition. And it's not like this was a player who's been consistent every single year, always putting up, you know, 1,200, 1,300 yards. Like, last year was the best season of his career.
Yeah, I just think the ultimate caveat there would be if you are a believer in Shuck, you've kind of made it apparent that you aren't a believer in Shuck. But I'm a lot more on the page where Shuck could end up being a top 10, top 15 overall quarterback. And if you think that's in the range of outcomes, this is very clearly the best quarterback situation of his career. And like you kind of pointed out, it was a small sample size, but an 18-point-per-game stretch for him, a guy that can create that easy separation, that can work down the field in an offense that we project to be one of the three fastest in the NFL. Like, the upside is very clear. If Kellen Moore, if Tyler Shuck lead this to be a top 10 overall Saints offense, Olave is going to be a big-time producer in fantasy. There is a little bit more risk in terms of his projection than I would say the other guys we've talked about ahead of him.
Yeah, and I might change my opinion on him once I actually do the Saints projections, because they're very closely, they're coming up for me. And I am going to obviously project Shuck for maybe lower than some people will, but I'm not going to bury the guy. I think there's still going to be a fast-paced offense and that type of thing. So Olave, of course, people were mad that he wasn't in the last video. Egbuka pretty much was just on the doorstep of being in the last video. Obviously, it's going to be hard for me to make a Bucks take after making an anti-Saints take, but I did talk about him ad nauseum in yesterday's video.
So this is like the inverse, right? Because you have Olave a little bit lower, and I have Olave about where the consensus is. You have Egbuka a good bit higher than where I do.
Yeah, and I am at 14 positionally, and I'm at 34 overall. It looks like Sammy's in lockstep with me from a dynasty perspective. I'm also like one of the highest on the site. On him as well. The Egbuka case that I made in yesterday's video essentially was, okay, in the first five games, where was his alignment? It wasn't X receiver. He was playing Z receiver opposite Mike Evans. We've gotten many reports out now that he will not be playing X receiver primarily, even though I do think he'll mix into that role, that alignment. You're going to avoid those number one corners for the most part, because I do see it very likely that Chris Godwin is playing X receiver at times. Ted Hurst, the 6'4", you know, super athletic receiver that we took in the third round, is going to be playing X receiver at times. And Jalen McMillan's going to be playing X receiver at times. I guess the important thing for me on Emeka Egbuka is the stuff that I think actually went wrong last year, which is that once he suffered the hamstring injury in San Francisco, most fantasy doctors expected him to be out 2 to 4 games. He came back the following week on Monday Night Football in Detroit. You and I were at Game 7 of the Mariners and Blue Jays series when that was happening. Emeka Egbuka missed no time with that injury, and I expected him to miss time. So the fact that he kind of just wore down the stretch, one of the worst catchable target rates in the NFL, Baker Mayfield playing like shit, 11 different offensive line combinations, I just generally think that the offense will run through him. He's going to have, let's say, 140-ish target projection in my projections, if I had to guess. And we're looking at a guy, for me, that I view as, yeah, he can be, not calling him this year's JSN, but let's call him 2024's JSN, where he's like a 14, 15, 16 point per game producer.
Yeah, that's definitely the upside case for Egbuka. I guess I'll bring up some of the cons here. I think it's tough to completely write off what he did down the stretch. Obviously, there's context. He was banged up. But at the same time, we did see a snap rate go down. That also coincided with Jalen McMillan coming back from the neck injury. And I do ultimately think it's going to be more of a relatively flat, even target distribution than maybe you do. Because you're probably more on the stage that it's going to be Egbuka and then everybody else is going to factor in. I more so think when you look at the combination of Egbuka, Godwin, Jalen McMillan, maybe Cade Otton getting about 12% of the targets here, maybe Ted Hurst working in, I just think it's far more ambiguous. And on top of that, I feel like you're going to be higher on the projection of the Bucs offense than I am. I view them as more of a fringe top 18 to 20 type
of
offense.
That's exactly where they're going to end up for me. I'm not going to project.
All right, so you're on the same page. I wasn't sure if maybe you're a little bit more optimistic because obviously you're more of a Baker guy than I am for sure.
Yeah, no, they'll probably be about a league average offense for me too. I'm not going to project them much higher than that. My thing is like a 23.6% target share as a rookie with all that went wrong and Mike Evans there for a lot of those games as well. Like I think that he can build upon that and have a 25% target share. And I think that him and Godwin generally will be about 25-22%. And then Jalen McMillan, Ted Hurst, and those guys will fall in line behind. I don't view Jalen McMillan on the same level of a target earner as Egbuka or Godwin, frankly.
Yeah, I just think down the stretch, the way he played, like compared to the fact that he missed the first half of the year, obviously the way he finishes rookie year, like I feel like McMillan will be a factor to a certain point. But like you said, Egbuka could very well easily lead this team in targets, 25%+ of the share. I just personally prefer the profiles of some other guys around him, which is why he ends up at 43 for me.
In two seasons, Jalen McMillan has exceeded 20% of his team's targets in a single game 3 times. Like, he's not a target earner. He's a touchdown and big play threat. That's why
I'm not a huge
kind
sample,
of not optimistic on him.
It is unfortunate because I'm curious what it would have looked like if he didn't break his neck in the preseason too.
Yeah, but even like accounting for the stretch at the back half of his rookie season, he wasn't earning targets. He was scoring.
Yeah. Ultimately, though, I honestly think between all these three players, with Egbuka, with Godwin, with McMillan, they're all very similar archetypes, and I think they're probably going to be used in conjunction.
Maybe. I just view it as like Egbuka, tier, Godwin, tier, McMillan, and Hurst. Yeah. That's kind of how I view it. Anyways, Jalen Waddle, also another guy that I am extremely high on. I can't imagine there's a single person on the site higher than me on Jalen Waddle, and there is apparently. Sammy is higher than me on Jalen Waddle. And you're kind of right in the same neck of the woods there. I'm wide receiver 17. You're at 21. For me with Jalen Waddle, the thing that I get excited about is when I projected out the Broncos, it was pretty easy to get to Jalen Waddle having 14, 15 fantasy points per game, because in his career, despite sharing the field with Tyreek Hill for the majority of his career from the last, you know, three and a half years or so, we're looking at a guy who's been consistently a 23, 24% target share player. And Cortland Sutton is not near the target earner that a prime Tyreek Hill when he first got to Miami was. So I view Jalen Waddle, honestly, as a guy that can play all over the formation. Most of the beat writers have come out and said that, and I talked about that in yesterday's video, that every route looks the same for him. They can use him at all three levels. They're going to give him, they should feed him 10 targets a game, one of the beat reporters said. Like, he apparently looks incredible. He's in his prime. And what one thing you're going to notice with my rankings especially is that I do really favor those guys that have finished as wide receiver ones before in the mid rounds, because it is definitely, at least in my experience, the most predictive indicator of future production. And you think about last year with Chris Olave as a good example of this. He was going in round 6 because of the concussion issues, but he had finished already as a top 15 receiver on a season before, which is why I was all in on him. And I think Jalen Waddle to me kind of represents a similar case on a team that went to the AFC Championship last year.
Yeah, Waddle being this year's Olave, especially given the fact that we kind of view him right now as damaged goods. It's like, oh, he's been banged up and now he's not even on, you know, the team that drafted him anymore. Like, I feel like there's kind of that stink. Obviously, there's the inverse where, I mean, you're going from the fucking Dolphins to the Denver Broncos. Like, I objectively speaking, this is a big time move, but I feel like a lot of people are kind of downplaying just how big of a move it is. Cause even if we are overall not where we were with the Broncos last year, like the Broncos, let's just say they are more of a 22 and a half, 23 point per game offense as opposed to 24. Even that is just so much more than what you're getting from the Miami projection.
Yeah. And I have them projected for 27.94 points per game. I'm all wow. in, dude. I'm all so, in. I think this so Vegas is at 5 to 10 offenses in football.
Vegas is at 22.25. So I'd probably be somewhere between where you're at and where Vegas is at. Cause ultimately I think Vegas is probably a little bit too low.
Yeah. I mean, they have the number one offensive line in football, according to ESPN. They have a top 12 strength of schedule. Despite having a top three defense last year, they were 57% pass rate. Like, this is a team that does like to throw the ball, and their stable of running backs between Dobbins, Harvey, and Coleman are all capable guys, but I don't think you have a guy there you need to feed the ball to all the time. And Jalen Waddle and Bo Nix and Cortland Sutton, to me, will be the engines of this offense. And I actually like all three of them at value. And Jalen Waddle is the one that I think has the highest ceiling just because he's already done it. He's already had that, you know, wide receiver 12 finish or whatever he had in 2022. Again, keep in mind that Tyreek Hill was like an MVP candidate that year. I'm definitely
not at 27.75 or 27.9, but also I understand that the Vegas projection at 22.25, like, it'll probably be, like I said, the 12th to 10th best offense, in my opinion.
Yeah. I mean, they were fifth in offensive plays in 2024. In 2025, they have this new hotshot play caller. I've brought up this point before. Sean Payton is the most egotistical coach in the NFL. The fact that as an 18-year experienced head coach, he's handing over play calling duties to Davis Webb must mean that he must know what the fuck he's doing. So that's the other part of this. I think that by the end of this season, we're going to look back at the Broncos and be like, wow, breakout offense of 2026, sorry, and Davis Webb's a head coach somewhere. That's what I think this season is going to look like for the Broncos.
It definitely could. And I just think ultimately where Waddle's going, there's not much downside risk outside of injury. So,
yeah, for sure. Again, numbers are a little bit wonky. So Davante Adams, not, if I switch to this tab, you can see he's not really in this tier. He's actually kind of in the tier below. But if I just go back, we could just talk about him now. Again, generally speaking, there's not a massive difference between the guys in this range anyways. Everybody will point to the touchdown regression monster.
Yeah.
Davante Adams, especially, but also, you know, Matthew Stafford and the Rams offense potentially. I guess I would just say what changed here. You still have Stafford, you still have McVay, you still have Puka Nacua. Davante Adams showed no evident signs of decline last year. He led the NFL in touchdowns in only 14 games. I guess you could say, okay, maybe naturally he only has 9, 10, 11 touchdowns instead of 14 in 14 games, but I just feel very confident and comfortable clicking his name.
Yeah, I guess the big worry there is if he's not scoring a touchdown per game and you're only getting, let's just say, again, it's going to be a 34-year-old receiver. He was at 56.5 yards per game last year. If that fell to 51 yards per game and instead of scoring 14 touchdowns, he scores 8 or 9, you're probably talking about the wide receiver 25 to 30 as opposed to a top 10 guy.
Yeah, and I think that's why his ADP is 50.3, and I think in home leagues maybe he'll go a little higher than that just because of the big name aspect of Davante Adams, but in the fifth round, like, even if his floor is, let's say, 13 points per game, I think you feel pretty comfortable with that pick. But like you said, you know, maybe you'd regret taking him in the fifth round if you took him over like Trevion Henderson's breakout season or Cam Scatterbo's breakout season or something like that.
So we'll talk about this guy later on, because obviously there's a huge chasm in our rankings between where this guy is. But simply off of that ceiling factor alone, because ultimately I think Davante Adams is a get on base play. You're trying to hit a single, you're trying to hit a double, you're trying to get maybe 85 to 90% of what he was last year in an ideal world. Like, I don't think anybody's drafting Davante Adams saying, oh, he's going to do exactly what he did last year.
It's just I wouldn't say exactly, but I could see him scoring 12 times and actually having more targets than he had last year. Cause I know he only had 8.1 targets per game, 4 receptions per game. I think he can have more than that, to be honest, in a best case scenario.
It just is tricky. Cause like, what if this is like, oh yeah, going from 33 to 34, it's like the Julio Jones thing.
It could be. Like, yeah, it absolutely could be. But I mean, I got a future Hall of Fame receiver that still looked like a Pro Bowler last year. I'm not going to just predict a downfall just because he's 34. Yeah.
But I will factor it in when I'm looking at some home run swings in this range. Again, we'll talk about, you know, we're lower on consensus than where Tetero McMillan is, but Tetero McMillan, I think, has higher upside given the age.
I don't.
Carnell Tate. I mean, even like him versus Mike Evans, probably a different conversation too, because Mike Evans with the hamstring, but we'll talk about all those guys.
I just think saying things like Tetero McMillan has higher upside, I would just say why? Why? Because he's younger?
24-year-old going on 25 receiver, and I'm a little bit more concerned about the downfall of a 34-year-old than you are.
I just think when you actually project out a ceiling scenario for both guys, then Adams comes out on top. That's why I would say, but I don't think he has a higher ceiling than
Adams. I'm more so also implying that 33-year-old Davante Adams is probably going to be better than what we see from 34-year-old Davante Adams. And even though I'm lower on McMillan, objectively speaking, year one to year two, he should take a step up naturally.
I guess. You're going to see where I'm definitely lower on Tetero McMillan. Let's talk to Ladd McConkey, Terry McLaurin, and Garrett Wilson. Again, they should all be in the same relative tier as Igbuka, Waddle, and Adams, because you can see, just go by the numbers. The numbers are a good indication, essentially, of where these guys are at. Speaking on Ladd McConkey, I talked about him a little bit yesterday, so I'll save my kind of stuff on him. My point, essentially, the TLDR version, was that I don't see a huge difference between him and Quentin Johnston. You're paying 36.9 overall ADP on Ladd McConkey versus Quentin Johnston goes in like the eighth round or whatever. So for me, as the manager of Ladd McConkey in the Flock League last year, there was no discernible difference between the two guys. Quentin Johnston was wide receiver 19 in fantasy points per game when you factor in receivers that played at least 8 games. Like, he was a legit dude. Ladd McConkey was not as good as Quentin Johnston last year. You can say, okay, rookie year, Ladd McConkey's coming back, whatever. Yeah. When I projected these two guys out, they both project for about 13.5 to 14.5 points per game. So for me, the one concern I have for McConkey is that he's not like the clear-cut number one this year's Jaxon Smith-Njigba type upside that some people seem to think that he has.
So that's where I will rebuttal, because ultimately the thing we can't account for is just the change of scheme, and we also can't account for just how much of a pest that Keenan Allen was. And I know that sounds stupid because Keenan Allen is unsigned right now, and Keenan Allen is clearly a washed player. But Ladd McConkey thrives in space, being able to create separation, being able to catch the ball around, 10 to 15 yards and really utilize that 4-3 speed in the open space. Having a guy like Keenan Allen, who was taking a lot of that idealized usage, to me, having that not on the team and having a guy in Mike McDaniel who historically has opened up this style of wide receiver is where the pro Ladd McConkey people are going to come. I have my wide receiver 19 because ultimately I think that is a ceiling worth striving for. Again, 19 versus 17, probably about in lockstep where the market is. But that's not to say that QJ isn't a great value down the board.
Yeah, I mean, Ladd McConkey, the biggest issue was Keenan Allen at the beginning of the season. And from weeks 11 onward here, you see 2 games of top 24 production. It's not like Keenan Allen was an issue the entire year, I guess would be my only counter to the Keenan Allen side of it. And also, Keenan Allen could still be signed there, in my opinion.
I think the train is kind of passed on
maybe,
that.
Maybe, we'll see. Like, if he wants to play again, like, it's possible that Herbert would vouch for him because they played together so many years and stuff. I don't think it's outside the range of outcomes. And here's my ultimate point here. If Keenan Allen at 35 years old or however old he is,
it's just the usage.
This much of a hindrance to Ladd McConkey, maybe Ladd McConkey isn't as good as people think he is.
Yeah, but also you got to take into account that you're going from literally a prehistoric offensive mind to Mike McDaniel, and maybe just Greg Roman didn't like the size. Like, that's really what it came down to.
Maybe he didn't. Like, I guess that's
like
just bolsters I think QJ is just as good of a receiver as him.
So I don't think that
fits the scheme better than McConkey does, in my opinion.
Better than McConkey and McDaniel.
Absolutely. Quentin Johnson's strength, slants, crossing routes, all that kind of stuff. He's better at that than McConkey is.
He's not nearly as fluid in the open field as McConkey is.
I just disagree with that.
I mean, we'll end up seeing. But when I see Ladd McConkey, I see the perfect wide receiver for what Mike McDaniel wants to do. And I think this could be a Jaylen Waddle type of situation.
It could be. Yeah, it could be for sure. I still like McConkey for what it's worth. And I still have him.
I like QJ down projected. The board too.
Yeah, so. I still like him projected slightly ahead of Quentin Johnson, because ultimately I think, like, if we simulated the season 100 times, just 55 of them, he would outscore Ladd McConkey. But I think the market is treating it like 95% of the time he would outscore Quentin Johnson.
I would probably be at about an 80 to 85. At the end of the day, the way I look at it is, if this offense does take the necessary step, they're a top 10 offense in the league. Herbert throws for, let's not even say 2021 numbers, but let's say his best season since 2021, which we both believe to be in the range of outcomes. If he's passing for 4,500 yards and 30-plus passing touchdowns, I think both of them are going to be smashes at ADP. I just think Ladd McConkey is going to have the higher echelon of smash if he's able to get across the line.
Yeah,
like he can legitimately be the 18th.
Looks like weeks 10 to playoff game Ladd McConkey from his rookie season, then I can see a 17 point per game season in his range of outcomes.
And that's kind of where my belief is. I think he's more of that player than the guy who struggled last year. Cause I do think you have merit. I'm like,
I basically projected efficiency wise, target share wise for exactly halfway in between those two players.
Yeah. Again, like your determining factor on if McConkey's going to be worth it in the fourth is just where you're kind of at in the pendulum. So the way I kind of view McConkey is more so just a slightly cheaper version of how I view Zay Flowers.
Yeah, I guess would rather take Zay Flowers and Quentin Johnston than Ladd McConkey and whatever other receiver I would get at Quentin Johnston's ADP.
That's fine.
Terry McLaurin, for now,
I'm in on
clear-cut number one receiver in Washington. It sounds like there will be an addition at some point, probably of Brandon Ayuk, maybe of a different receiver. I have him at 45 overall positionally. You are actually the highest on the site at 20. I'm at 22. you're the highest on the site overall as well. I'll let you make the pro case for him, considering you're the highest.
Yeah, I've historically been an anti-Terry McLaurin guy, but who doesn't like career high in touchdowns, career high in terms of fantasy points per game, wide receiver 7 overall that we saw in Jaden Daniels' rookie year? We kind of saw the pendulum swing last year where it's like McLaurin before the training camp stuff, because keep in mind his ADP did slide once the training camp rolled out and all that shit happened. But before that happened, he was like kind of more of considered a 3-4 turn pick. And all of a sudden,
he was going higher than that. He was an early third at one point.
He was an early third. Oh, right. Yeah. Cause he was going with the CeeDee Lamb teams. That's correct.
Yeah.
He was an early third round pick. Obviously, the holdout and, you know, didn't really get off to a hot start. And obviously, we saw what happened in those first 11 weeks. He's basically a useless fantasy season for Terry McLaurin. But you go back a couple years ago. We go to 2024 real quick. This guy down the stretch had, what, 4 out of 6 games with over 20 fantasy points? Like, I think that level of ceiling, that level of big play upside on top of being in what I think is going to be the best offensive coordinator system of his career, having a guy like David Blau calling your offense, guess what? We're going to be getting him moved inside. We're going to be getting him moved across the formation. We're going to be getting him on less stagnant overall routes. Like when I'm looking at Terry McLaurin, you're combining the David Blau usage with just the overall touchdown equity he had in his first year with Jaden Daniels. The ceiling could legitimately be a 17 point per game receiver.
Funny you mentioned 17 points per game, because during that breakout game, Cincinnati Bengals Monday Night Football for Jaden Daniels, from that point onward, he was a 17 point per game receiver, wide receiver 12 over that stretch. So while you and I were lower on Terry McLaurin last season because of the holdout and some of the regression to the touchdowns, and I don't think either of us are arguing that he's going to score 14 times or 13 times or whatever he scored in 2024. As of now, he is like by far the clear-cut number one wide receiver there. Debo Samuel is gone. Maybe they'll bring back Debo. Maybe they'll bring back, Ayuk to work with Jaden Daniels, or maybe they'll bring in Stephon Diggs or something like that. I don't want to get too over my skis on him because I'm kind of almost baking in that they will add somebody, which is why I have him at like 22 or whatever it was. But I still think he's one of these get on base receivers in the early to mid fourth round that I'd feel comfortable with. Maybe you get him even at a slight discount because of how bad he was last year.
Well, so the optimism you had with Davis Webb coming in with the Broncos potentially, like you said, you're very high on the offense. Like, I think David Blau could have a similar type of impact.
I guess my concern with that comparison is David Blau is running the offense not underneath a Sean Payton, whereas Davis Webb is running the offense underneath a Sean Payton, and also Commander's worst offensive line. Bo Nix has in totality.
It's not a 1-to-1.
They have a better run game, like better. Like it's a light situation, I guess.
Yeah. I agree. It's not a 1-to-1. It's more so just based off the perspective of their expectations. Cause I think people have higher expectations that on the Broncos offense. Whereas I feel like people are kind of more concerned with Washington, where it's like Jaden Daniels has been banged up and Terry McLaurin held out and we don't know what to expect. I just also think the nature of the division with how the Cowboys are projecting, with how the Eagles are projecting, with the potential improvement with the Giants, like, I think that division as a whole could be fireworks.
It could be. Yeah, it definitely could be. Garrett Wilson's quite low in my rankings, so I can quickly make the anti-Wilson take. I have him as my 50th overall player at wide receiver. He's at 25 for me. Now, I have been the Garrett Wilson guy, as you guys know. I'm the Garrett Wilson truther. I took him over Jefferson famously in the Flock League. I just frankly think that Garrett Wilson is Terry McLaurin, but that being said, Garrett Wilson doesn't have Jaden Daniels. He has Geno freaking Smith, who most recent news on him is not favorable. If you guys have been following Twitter, what's going on with one of his exes or something like that. I just think this situation is not very good. Not only is Garrett Wilson potentially have the lowest target share of the last couple of years coming up because Omar Cooper's a good receiver, Adonai Mitchell's reportedly getting hype in training camp, and Kenyon Sadiq and Mason Taylor, they could run a lot more two tight end sets. And as we know, whenever Garrett Wilson's out there, he's getting number one corners, he's getting shadow covered, all that kind of thing. Yes, he was great before the injury last year. I just tend to think that he was a volume sponge in a bad situation, and now he's a volume sponge in a bad situation with a potential downtick in volume. That's kind of the way I would look at him right now.
So the one thing I will counter back is he did those in what, weeks 1, 3, 4, 5. Week 2, I believe he played with the backup quarterback because Fields wasn't in that game.
I mean, he's playing with backup quarterbacks all the time, Danny.
no, fair, but I again, just playing with Justin Fields. So in the games that he played with Justin Fields last year were weeks 1, 4, and 5. And we got legitimate production from him as the alpha, a guy that was getting basically A-plus targets every game, a guy that was scoring every game. There was only one game in that stretch where Justin Fields had over 30 passing attempts.
I just, don't you think the Jets just shit goes wrong? Sure. You can never take game splits that are good with the Jets.
I get that, Corey. But also, even if you're lower on Geno Smith, objectively speaking, even if you're lower,
Justin Fields is no better quarterback.
Justin Fields is not a better quarterback than Geno
Smith. When you account for his rushing and how he moves in offense, yes, he is.
No, bro.
Geno Smith is horrible. He's been washed for 3 years.
Geno Smith's been a top 20 quarterback 2 years ago. Justin Fields was never that. Yes, he was. What do you mean?
All that being said, a lot of this is due to the fact that the quarterback situation is still shit.
I get that, but saying that Fields is better. At
some point as well.
Saying that you think Fields is better than Geno is base, bro.
Kaka versus PP. They both suck ass.
There's a clear difference between a low-end starting quarterback and a guy that is lucky to be a backup. Which
they're
is
both backup quarterbacks in the NFL.
Oh, man. And then I guess that's where we disagree, because I have Garrett Wilson a lot higher than you are. The fact that I think at minimum it is slightly better quarterback play than last year. And even though in the long term I'm higher on Omar Cooper, I'm higher on Kenyon Sadiq, that's more so a 2027 and on play. I do think both are probably going to start the season relatively slow, because I think Garrett Wilson is the unquestioned alpha here.
Yeah, and I could see myself looking really stupid by week 8 on Garrett Wilson, where he's like a 14.5 point per game receiver or something like that, which would be like the best of his career, by the way. It's not like he's been much better than that. And also, by down the stretch, I think Cooper and Sadiq will start to pick things up, and maybe he loses a little bit of targets when it matters most. So for me, I just feel like he's exactly how you get sixth place in your fantasy league by drafting him at the 3-4 turn. Like, I just don't think he's winning you shit.
Yeah, I'm high on the player overall talent. I feel like we're already getting the discount with the offense, because realistically, from a pure target commanding standpoint, overall talent perspective, if he was in an average offense, I don't think we'd be having the conversation.
No, we wouldn't be. I think there's zero chance around a bottom five offense in football.
Like, the way we kind of viewed Olave, except for obviously the health issue he's dealing with. Yeah. Like, he was going really at the early portion of the third round in the top 25, 26. If that's where Olave is going with still question marks with the Saints, I kind of view Olave and Wilson same caliber of talent.
Yeah, I guess I'll take my chances on Garrett Wilson buying low on him if the Jets look better than I think, or I'll get my shares in other formats. In best ball, he's too expensive, in my opinion. He's too expensive in best ball. In redraft, maybe you'll get him in round 5 and he'll slide a little bit because people don't like the Jets or something like that. Like we saw in the Flock League, him slide way beyond his actual best ball ADP. I think best ball is like the worst format to take him, because he also needs touchdown upside to score in half PPR formats, and I just don't think he has that on the Jets offense.
Funny enough, I still think he, like, obviously in totality wasn't a good best ball pick, but after the first 5 weeks, you're probably thinking you got the steal of the draft.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. He would have been one of the best picks on the board if he had continued that, but there's a very good chance he wouldn't have, because the Jets would have still sucked ass, and they might still do exactly what they did last year. Garrett gets banged up, they shut him down. Like, it's possible. Very possible that happens as well.
So I have Garrett Wilson at 17, and we're about to talk about the guy I have at 18. So clearly I'm the one more pro on both these guys. And the reason why you're not as, I would say,
far off now because of the Odunze stuff. I have him at 49 overall. Positionally, I'm at 24. So, yeah, I guess I'm a little bit lower still.
Yeah, and the reason why I'm high, it's very simple. Depending on how you feel about Burden versus Odunze, you're more so Odunze versus Burden if Odunze is fully healthy. I'm just on the Burden over Odunze regardless of the situation right now. Obviously, now that Odunze is dealing with an injury, makes me even more bullish about Burden. But realistically, what it comes down to is I think both those guys are going to be fighting for the number two target in the offense. I do believe the number one will be Loveland. And I do think the number two slash number three in this offense, for what we expect from Ben Johnson, the leap we could see from Caleb Williams, the overall schedule of the Bears, like I think they're going to be a 12 to 13 win type of football team. They play the Detroit Lions in week 17. That could be a 55, 60 point type of outing. When I combine all these factors, Burden is the type of profile and the type of situation I want to be investing in at the 4 or 5 turn.
Yeah, both of these guys, I think this is a philosophical thing for us. You're willing to trust Garrett Wilson's sample size a little bit more with Justin Fields. You're willing to trust Luther Burden's sample size of when he was playing full snaps. I'm not really willing to trust either of those situations. I would rather take Mike Evans, who I have a much larger sample size of him being a great receiver. Obviously, he's a little bit older now. Brian Thomas Jr. Like, I don't view Brian Thomas Jr., Rome Odunze, Jameson Williams, DJ Moore, Marvin Harrison, Quentin Johnson, all that differently from Garrett Wilson and Luther Burden. I think that they're all mid-round receivers that have pros, that have cons. I'm going to trust the guys that have a little bit more of a proven track record as my tiebreaker, but anybody can really argue any which way.
So I think in totality, like, you're not far off. Like, for reference, between my 17th overall receiver and my 29th overall receiver, there's only one tier of difference, and realistically, that's probably the most, I would say, muted tier compared to, you know, the guys above. Like, Nico to Pickens, I think, is a bigger tier than maybe even Garrett Wilson to Christian Watson.
Yeah, and if I go to the list view where it's a little bit more accurate here, you can see that Burden is essentially the last guy in this tier, and then we would move down to, like, Mike Evans of the world beyond that point. So, again, just keep in mind that the tiers are kind of jumbled a little bit. These are probably the more accurate numbers, but just look at the number itself. Danny, let's go rapid fire here. I don't think we need to go
real quick, one more
individually
thing
on some of these guys. Go ahead.
Real quick, one more thing, because you mentioned, like, I'm more willing to invest in the small sample size. You're a little bit more wary. You're willing to more so invest in older players with, you know, maybe injuries, maybe stuff like that kind of affecting their overall view.
I guess
so. I'm a little bit more pessimistic in that capacity. So the way we kind of evaluate risk, I'm more so willing to buy in sample. You're more so willing to buy in older players.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty much, I mean, you're higher on McLaurin, who's an older player. It's pretty much just Evans and Adams that I'm willing to buy.
It's Evans and Adams,
older players. But yeah, generally, I like to try and anchor myself a little bit more than, like, a couple of games with Burden, which is fine. I love the prospect. I think he can definitely develop and become the number one receiver there. And in a best case scenario, I just worry about the likelihood of it happening. Again, Mike Evans, we know the history of this player. He's been 1,000 yards every year of his career that he's been healthy, which of course was last year not being the case. San Francisco, I don't want to sit here and say that San Francisco is going to be as good as they were last year. I think it's possible they could regress a little bit. However, I think that Mike Evans in the fourth round, in the fifth round, feels like a pretty comfortable click to me, just because I know in the red zone he's going to have a lot of autonomy to be a go up and get it guy. He has 10 plus touchdown upside on a good team. And I've brought up the point before that he doesn't really get schemed open very often, and Kyle Shanahan could make that a priority. I don't want to spend too much time on Evans because I feel like everybody knows what they're getting with him. But I do think he has a slightly better projection here than he would have had he stayed in Tampa Bay.
Yeah, I mean, obviously the offensive projection, like, if we go to the Vegas projections alone, and they're probably like the sixth ranked offense. Like, if I go Mason Post,
I can see right now on Mike Clay's projections, because I haven't gotten to San Francisco yet on my own.
Number seven,
fourth in offensive points per game.
Seven by Vegas. So, like, yeah, number four by Mike, number seven by Vegas. You're probably going to have them at worst like eighth or ninth, probably higher, to be honest. Like, yeah, the offensive projection is very there. The issue that I have with Mike Evans is we're always going to get the hamstring flare-ups. Yeah. I do think this is very clearly a very high, I would say, competition for targets, assuming Kittle's healthy. And there's reports, there's videos of him running in training camp right now, running in the offseason.
It's not higher than Tampa Bay's competition for targets, though, would be my counter.
I mean, George Kittle plus Pearsall plus...
The data does not favor him being George Kittle of old, coming off of an Achilles tear at 32 and a half years old.
Sure, maybe, but at the same time, Kittle plus McCaffrey overall is probably, if both are healthy, a 180 to 200 targets.
Maybe, but, like, think about what Mike Evans has had in his career. Like, Chris Godwin, second leading receiver in franchise history, Emeka Ogbuka last year, J-Mac at the end of, like, at the end of 2024, you had Godwin out, but J-Mac producing. Like, he's had multiple targets. He's done this already. He's done this many times. Like, target competitions, he eats it for breakfast, lunch, dinner.
He has, but betting on the 33-year-old moving teams in the offseason to a team with a whole different target hierarchy, to me, I feel like you have to factor into a certain point.
I do factor it in, which is why he's in the 40s, yeah, not in the 30s for me, because I have a player who's been a wide receiver one every year of his career that he's been healthy.
Yeah. Again, like you're more so willing to overlook the age, overlook the change in team, because you're like, oh, this could be this year.
It's a round discount for the age. I'm not overlooking it. He'd be in the 30s for me if he wasn't 33 years old.
But I'm saying both those factors you're willing to overlook. Like in totality, you are, because that's why you're drafting him in the 40s still.
Yeah. I mean, they're factoring into my ranking of it, though. It's not overlooked. I'm just factoring it in less than you are. A quick reminder that today's video podcast is brought to you by Underdog Fantasy. Underdog is the best place to play this best ball summer. All you do is draft. There's no waivers, there's no trades, no in-season management. You just draft your teams, get refined for your home redraft leagues, and collect your winnings at the end of the year. $2 million and $15 million in total prizes to the first place winner of Best Ball Mania 7. Definitely something we are max entering. We are very excited to get refined for our own home leagues, and we want you to join us using our promo code FSE at sign up and first deposit on Underdog and first play on Underdog. We'll get you our redraft rankings manifesto, our draft guide, and our dynasty draft guide for free. That's it. All you have to do is sign up, make a play on the site, and you will get both of our draft guides and our weekly rankings in season to help you with your start sit decisions for free. Check that out if you guys are interested. Head to Underdog Fantasy and use the promo code FSC at sign up and first deposit.
That's what, when I say overlook, I'm not saying that you're just completely ignoring all the negative factors. It's just more so you're willing to overcome them. You acknowledge them and you realize, hey,
yeah,
I acknowledge these and I'm still willing to take the plunge.
And he'll be off my board if he's banged up in training camp, for what it's worth. The second he gets banged up in training camp, he's off my board. And honestly, during the season, if he starts producing, I'd probably look to sell high on him as well.
And I'll just tell you the reason why he's lower for me. I have him at 26, two factors. So first of all, I have Davante Adams one spot ahead of him because I think they're the same thesis, except we saw it from Davante Adams last year in a new team. Like, I think that's fair, right?
You have Davante Adams way ahead of him.
And then the difference here would be that obviously we talked about Burden already. We talked about Wilson already, but two guys we haven't talked about yet are Carnell Tate and Tedaro McMillan. I'd rather take the risk on their offensive situations than I would take the risk on the age of Evans. That's where I'm at with them, because I think both are going to be potentially 23, 24-year-old ascending players versus a 33-year-old descending player.
Mathematically, the biggest busts in this territory of the draft are rookies, just by the way. I know
it's just more so I think Carnell Tate's mispriced.
Or Carnell Tate maybe outweighs what you think of Mike Evans. But historically, the bigger bust is more likely to be the Tedaro McMillans and Carnell Tate of the world than it is the Mike Evans and Davante Adams of the world.
We'll talk about Tate, because that is clearly, as you guys will see, the biggest discrepancy in our rankings by far.
Okay, we got to speed this up. Tedaro McMillan, he is lower for both of us, but definitely for me, mainly just because I don't think there's much more meat left on the bone here. And it's not because I don't think Bryce Young can take a step forward. It's not because I don't think Tedaro McMillan can take a step forward. It's that he's used X receiver, big boy routes, number one corners. I don't think we're going to see a 70% catch rate from this guy. So he's going to need touchdowns and big plays. And Bryce Young is not really the type of quarterback that's going to, you know, throw for 4,700 yards and have 30 plus touchdowns. And Jalen Coker is going to be a factor. They just paid him a big contract. And when on the field together, Tedaro McMillan's target share, I have it copy and pasted basically as his projection, was about 24% instead of the 25, 26% it was without Jalen Coker. So that's a factor.
Yeah, I definitely think it is a factor. I would agree with you overall. But when we look at if it was, Carolina, I guess the main difference would be the overall congestion of targets amongst the tight ends, amongst the other receivers, amongst even the backfield. Like, I just look at it as McMillan and Coker are clearly the two best targets on this team, and I think both can just naturally take steps.
Yeah, and like, just so you know, like when I project out, like you might be like 18% of the team's targets for the fucking tight end core of the Carolina Panthers. How the hell are they going to get that many targets? That's like a really low number for a tight end core, just FYI.
And I just think it's giving them too much credit, because I think those guys are glorified blockers.
Yeah, maybe. Again, I only have them projected for 97 targets between the three of them.
Yeah, and again, I like the backfield, but also just 92 backfield targets, a little high for me.
I mean, that's I don't think you're irrational, though. Dave Canales likes to run a lot of boot action, get the ball in the hands of the running backs. They're also, like, to again, just philosophically, they're one of the slowest paced, lowest pass rate teams in football.
to a certain point, but also it's a top 10 pick who just had over 1,000 yards as a rookie. I think naturally projecting a guy to take the step of 1,100, 1,150, I think is reasonable. And also I think the function of how the offensive passing game went last year, we didn't really get the full glimpse because also keep in mind that Jalen Coker was basically unusable in the first 8 weeks of the year.
Well, I haven't projected for 918 yards and 5 touchdowns. I'm not saying quite a bit of production.
I'm just more so saying how the targets are distributed. Like, obviously, you have Coker projected well. I'm just more so saying maybe the reason why the backfield targets were so high last year in the first 8 or so games was because Coker was missing time.
Maybe. I also have Bryce Young projected for a career high in yards, yards per attempt, touchdowns, completion percentage. Like, I have him having a career season. And even still, I have Tedrell McMillan for, barely 13 points per game.
Yeah, I guess the argument would be there. The split between McMillan and Coker isn't really the conversation. It's more so just how much can both of them combined accumulate on this offense? Can they be legitimately 48 to 50% of the targets combined?
I feel like we say that about every offense in football, and it actually rarely happens.
To a degree, but again, you have them at 42%. So do you really think it's outrageous to say a third-year receiver and a second-year receiver can just naturally both take a step 2 to 3%?
That's just not how projection work usually.
I get that, but I'm saying just from a macro perspective, when we're talking about young players, we always talk
they're
about
heuristics guys
up.
For sure. Yeah. Tedrell McMillan, you like second year receiver who was a top 10 pick. That's a heuristics based pick. From a projection standpoint, I think he's overvalued.
Yeah, which again, I think we have to balance both the heuristics as well as the projections. Obviously, the projections kind of keep us on earth a little bit, but also at the same time, we can acknowledge that young players do naturally get better.
Yeah, another guy that I'm not on earth with is Brian Thomas Jr., 51st overall in my rankings.
Wow, he skyrocketed up your rankings for sure.
Yeah, he's up my rankings for sure. 26th overall in my positional. Brian Thomas Jr., again, just philosophically, he's been a wide receiver one before. And that's just, this is not Mike Evans or Devontae Adams that I'm talking about here. Brian Thomas Jr. in his short 2-year career has already finished as a wide receiver one before, which is, when you're a wide receiver one in their prime, I talked about it last year. That was the Chris Olave archetype in the mid rounds. That is the Jalen Waddle archetype in the mid rounds. That was a couple of years ago before his injury, Chris Godwin's archetype in the mid rounds. When you have a guy that's already put up 1,300 yards and 8 touchdowns or whatever, it's just so much more likely, 10 touchdowns, that he's going to do it again. So I get the Parker Washington and the Jacoby Myers and the Travis Hunter of it all. Brian Thomas, the best receiver on this team.
So I have BTJ ranked ahead of ADP because I haven't had to, put him fully up. I could even get him close to 23, 22 out receiver because at the end of the day, all I have to explain is an offense we are both bought into with a quarterback we both believe in. Oh, by the way, the quarterback that was the quarterback one in points per game down the stretch that
top five MVP ballot
legitimately took a step up down the stretch in Liam Cohn's system. On a receiver that if you just flipped the overall career seasons and you said he was an 9.9 point per game guy as a rookie and a 16.7 point per game guy as a second year player, he would be going in the top 12 to 15 of drafts.
Well, and he was last year and nobody thought it was outrageous. Not one person did I hear say Brian Thomas shouldn't be going this high.
Yeah. And ultimately, again, the only factor that I had more last year, because keep in mind too, I am a little bit baking in that, Hunter might not play the full allotment of snaps on offense. And frankly, again, people might be saying, well, there's Jacoby Myers and Parker Washington. I think Travis Hunter at his 80th to 100th percentile outcome where he's playing full-time offense is absolutely more of a threat to Brian Thomas Jr. Than Parker Washington and Jacoby Myers is. The nuts and bolts are this guy's been a former 1,300 plus yard receiver. He plays as a big play X wide receiver, one of the best projectable offenses in the league. And you're getting him at wide receiver 31 because he wasn't good as a second year player fighting through injury.
I think the fact that him and Ladd don't go literally back to back in ADP to me is shocking because it's almost exactly the same thesis for both players.
Yeah, I definitely think that's valid. I think ultimately, there are obviously more mouths in Jacksonville, objectively speaking.
They also have more volume than Los Angeles does, though.
Yeah. Again, you're not going to hear me talk negative on Brian Thomas Jr. He's wide receiver 31 in ADP. We both have him ahead of ADP. And honestly, like I said, if his ADP was even 42nd overall, 43rd overall, I think that would be more applicable.
Yeah. Okay. So we are rattling these. Romo Dunze. Same thesis as Luther Burden. If he didn't have the whole stuff with his foot and so first of all, Dr. James Freddie assured me that's not really a huge issue. Dr. Scholl's inserts will solve that. It's not something that's an absolute issue here. However, Romo Dunze is not the one getting the drum beat. I'm the number one receiver on this team. Luther Burden has been the one getting that drum beat, so I have to adjust a little bit. I still am of the opinion that, assuming health for both players, that Romo Dunze will slightly be better for fantasy, but I have them projected for 14.25 and 13.8 PPR points per game, respectively. So I do think that the right answer will probably be neither or both. I think that they're probably both going to be solid picks at ADP, but because they both exist, and of course, I have Colson Loveland projected for the most points per game out of this receiver core, neither of them are going to smash, I guess would be my opinion. Even if the offense smashes, I think neither of these guys will smash.
So I guess what I will say is if either of these guys were to become legitimate 18, 19 plus point per game scorers, you would probably need Caleb Williams to be a top three MVP candidate.
And it will have to come at the expense of the other one, in my opinion, to some degree. Like injury or just one playing bad or something like that. Yeah. Odunze is not ripping off 18 points per game unless Burden stinks or is injured.
Yeah, or if he just had an outlier 17 touchdown year, probably.
Yeah, or something like that. So again, I don't think we need to spend much more time on Odunze. We talked about the Bears offense already. Jameson Williams, number one easiest schedule in the league. Jameson Williams, we saw the implied upside of what happens when Sam Laporta or Amon Ross St. Brown goes down, because every week this is a guy that we're ranking inside our top 12 to 15 receivers down the stretch because he was just an absolute monster. We're hearing again the drumbeat that he could take yet another step forward. I would like to point out that even though he was wide receiver 21 in points per game, last year was a historically bad season for wide receiver twos in fantasy. 12.94 points per game was like what Darnell Mooney put up in 2024 as wide receiver 40.
Well, Corey, look at it as simply as this. Those are averages. The year he averaged 14.15, he was a lower wide receiver rank than the year he averaged 12.94.
Exactly.
That tells you all you need to know.
It is. But that being said, I have a absolute hard-on for this Detroit Lions offense, and I will take Jameson Williams in round five just because I know he can be a great spike week producer for me on one of the best offenses in football.
So in best ball specifically, because obviously I think his redraft ADP is probably going to be lower just based off the fact that people love consistency in redraft, and he's not that. And again, we can acknowledge that. But the reason why you take him in best ball, and I think this would also echo with who you think the wide receiver three is in Chicago, you want access to the top offenses in isolated spike week territory. Once week 14, 15, 16, 17 comes, it doesn't really matter if you got the guy who scored the most accumulated points up to that point. It matters of who's in the right game environment, who has legitimate spike week upside. So even though I think Odunze is the wide receiver three in Chicago, even though I think Jameson Williams is the third or fourth target in Detroit, at the end of the day, when the money is on the line at the top in a best ball scenario specifically, they have to be pushed up the board because we've seen the evident spike week upside.
Yeah. No disagreements there. He's been in the league long enough. We kind of know what he is. This is one where I think people are going to do the like, oh my God, look how high his ceiling is without doing the projection. Because when I did the Buffalo Bills projections, I gave DJ Moore a 20.8% target share, which would be a big improvement from last year's target share that he had. And also a pretty big improvement from any receiver on the Bills the last couple of years as well. He came out with 13.09 points per game. So I kind of almost view him very similar to Teteroa McMillan in the sense that not because of Josh Allen versus Bryce Young, but because they do spread the ball out. They will pass the ball to their running backs. They do have Khalil Shakir still, who they like feeding the ball to. And I think Dalton Kincaid, actually, of all the Bills pass catchers at value, is my favorite at price. I think DJ Moore is going to go a little bit higher in home leagues just because the casuals are going to see Buffalo Bills wide receiver one. But I do think he's still an okay pick in the fifth, sixth round. It's just that in home leagues, especially where you and I are from, close to the Buffalo area, he's going to go in round four because people are going to go, he's the Bills wide receiver one.
Yeah, there's two ways to look at it, because there's going to be the people that just saying, oh, he's the Bills wide receiver one. And there's going to be the people that, I don't want to say overthink it, but are going to outweigh all the negative metrics as opposed to the situation. Because obviously you look at it, a guy that's fallen in three straight years in terms of yards per out run, 2.34 in his 2023 Chicago year where he was the wide receiver 8, down to 1.51, down to 1.26. I'm sorry, but if you're under 1.6 yards per out run, I don't even care about your role. You're probably not going to be too valuable. I think it's got to be a mix of both. He's probably got to be about a 1.8 to 1.9 yards per out run player, and also the situation is going to get him back on track to, like you said, maybe 12 to 15 points per game.
Yeah, and again, similar to what we said about Jameson Williams, 14.01 points per game 2 years ago would have been wide receiver 12 last year, not wide receiver 29 like it was in 2024. So, I mean, that's not insignificant production that he put up in Chicago when they sucked. Like they
look
had
at those routes per game. Oh my God. Yeah,
like I think it's possible that DJ Moore could rip off, you know, a 1,200 yard, 8 touchdown season. I wouldn't put it outside the range of outcomes, especially if Dalton Kincaid continues to deal with injuries and that kind of thing. The problem, though, is that I think they needed like a man coverage beating receiver to fully unlock this passing game, and they don't really have one still. So like that's kind of the issue I have with DJ Moore, is that I think he's going to vary league to league. If you're in leagues like me with like 4 or 5 Bills fans in the Buffalo area, there's no way I'm going to get DJ Moore at value. But if you're in a league where people are like, DJ Moore, not very good anymore, he'll probably go at like, you know, the 5-6 turn in some leagues, then yeah, I think I'm comfortable with him there.
I'm sorry, Bills fans, you might want to cover your ears, but I cannot possibly understand how 2 years ago you had the opportunity to deal a 3 for George Pickens, who literally completely fucking fixes your entire need on offense. Like you said, man coverage beating receiver.
Well, they didn't want a diva, so he doesn't fix that need.
Dog, who cares about a diva? They had fucking Stephon Diggs.
Well, exactly why they didn't want a diva.
Fair. I don't know. It's just the process of being able to get that type of guy for a third round pick at 24 years old versus a 27 year old DJ Moore for a second a year later. Like, that screams panic move. But at the end of the day in fantasy, we don't care if it's a panic move if he's scoring points.
Yeah, exactly. Marvin Harrison Jr., I'm obviously the one carrying this ranking, I'd imagine. I'm having wide receiver 30 if I go to general and see what I am for me, I believe, for the rest of the site. So it looks like me and Avery are the only ones inside the top 60 positionally. We're the only ones inside the top 30 at receiver. Again, projections made me lower on Harrison, and I'm glad I've been doing projections, because I would have been higher on Harrison than I am now had I not done projections. Because when you go to Arizona and you regress down their pass rate a little bit, because they're not going to be unsustainably throwing 45 times a game like they were down the stretch, and you also kind of progress Marvin Harrison beyond what he's done so far in his career, because so far in his career, he hasn't been, you know, a 23.2% target share player, which is what I have him projected for. He hasn't been 139 target player like I have him projected for. You have to do it at the expense of Michael Wilson, which I'm very comfortable doing because I don't think he's very good.
That's the point, right? So you have Harrison projected lower. Like 13.23 obviously is fine, but like you haven't projected overall lower, and that's with a 4.5 point delta between him and Michael Wilson. If those of you are watching at home and you think it's more of a 55-45, 60-40, as opposed to what would that be, a 35% difference in projection, then you're probably going to end up with an 11.5 point per game player and a 12 point per game player, or an 11.5 point per game player and an 11.8 point per game player. Like, if you think those guys are close, they're probably both a little bit overpriced, but if you have a stance one way or another, is how you kind of get to where they're at.
Yeah, which is what my stance is, obviously. And in the full career split with Marvin Harrison and Michael Wilson both on the field, I mean, Michael Wilson's useless for fantasy. Wide receiver 61 over that period of time, which is my opinion of Michael Wilson, which we've had at least 68 different arguments about. But
people might have simmed in the video just for this part, by the way.
Marvin Harrison Jr. is still worth his price, even in that scenario for me. If maybe you're just like, I'll just take Michael Wilson 2 rounds later or a round and a half later, that's totally fair. 67.8 ADP, he's baked in at that point in time. I'm going off of a large sample of him being the number one receiver, not target, receiver on this team. And I do think that even though they're going to be a little bit lower of a pass rate, I think that Jacoby Brissett will still be able to function this offense, because had Marvin Harrison stayed healthy, we might be having a different conversation about him. And even in his healthy games, we saw the spike week upside. And I do think playing X receiver in the NFL is very difficult. And I think that Marvin Harrison Jr. can take the classic third-year wide receiver breakout leap. Does that equal 17 points per game? Definitely not. The Cardinals aren't going to be good for that. But it could equal 13 or 14 points per game, 1,000 yards, 8 touchdowns, which is a very good pick in the 7th round or the 6-7 turn where he's going right now.
Yeah, so where I have both these guys ranked, I have them at 73 and 82 respectively. But the thing is, it's not really a congruent hit, because I do think if Marvin Harrison were to hit, you do have the ceiling of him, you know, the prospect profile, maybe he figured it out. Versus with Wilson, if he hits, it's more so just, we saw him be a 1,000-yard receiver
of this year kind of situation if he hits, probably.
Yeah, I would say maybe a little bit higher, but like probably similar projection there, yeah.
Okay, final guy from this tier, and then we won't even go in depth on the next tier. We'll just kind of show it and rapid fire it. Quentin Johnston.
Outside of one name who would be on this range.
I talked about him yesterday, so I'm not going to make the case for. I am way higher than everyone on the site, including the literal Quentin Johnston truther, Mason Dodd. I have Quentin Johnston absurdly high in my rankings, and It's very simple. I view him as almost equal to Ladd McConkey. Ladd McConkey goes at 37 or wherever he goes. So I'm comfortable taking Quentin Johnston in the 60s or in the 70s or in the 80s. Like, he's going in the 80s. I'll take him in the 60s or 70s to make sure I get him, because as I detailed in yesterday's video, TLDR version, he's an excellent fit for the offense. Slants, drags, all that stuff in Mike McDaniel's scheme is worth 2.5 times more fantasy points than the average NFL offense. And that's Quentin Johnston's shit. He scored 8 touchdowns in back-to-back seasons. Last year, wide receiver 26 in points per game, wide receiver 19 of wide receivers that finished 8 or more games in the NFL season. So for me, it's a contract year. I think he can be like this year's Alec Pierce, except it's on a better team. It's on an offense with Justin Herbert. It's on an offense called by Mike McDaniel. So instead of whatever Pierce had last year, 12, 13 points per game, I think Quentin Johnston could have 14, 15, no problem.
So it really fucking sucks that I feel like I have to make the con of this, because I have him right in line with ADP. I literally have him as the second highest on the entire site.
And well, then yes, don't make the con then. If you're right, you're high on him too.
Well, I'm high on him too, but I also think like I'm a lot lower than where you're at. And part of it is I view it as more of a chasm between what I think Ladd can be versus where I think QJ can be. Ultimately, I feel like obviously this is the complete Walmart version. I'm not saying that either of these guys are going to be as good as these guys, but also I like, if Ladd's like the Chase here and Quentin Johnson's like the Higgins, that's kind of how I view the discrepancy, obviously on a completely different scale.
Yeah, exactly. So pretty Walmart version, but very good projection nonetheless. Again, we can just go through these guys other than Tate, who I'm sure you're going to want to go a little bit more in depth on. All aesthetically, three rookies, I'll just give my opinion on all three rookies really quick. Okay. All three rookies have good projections realistically. Like, Tate goes into a situation, he can be the number one right away. Lemon, number two opposite Devontae Smith, not going to see number one coverage. I think the Eagles are going to be a decent passing offense this year, which is not a consensus opinion, but it's my opinion. Jordan Tyson, good projection, high pace of play for the New Orleans Saints. All three of them are worth their, let's say, respective, I guess Tate's going a little bit higher than these two guys, but I would say in round 6, round 7, round 8 is where you're going to get most of these rookie receivers in redraft leagues. I would say all three of them are worth that price tag. I just want to make sure that when I'm building out a team, they're my wide receiver 3, 4, or 5, not my wide receiver 1 or 2.
Yeah, which I think is reasonable. And the point I was going to make, by the way, is this is also just a graphical thing with the tier list view. Like, if we go to the rankings view, Tate, Watson, and Lemon would actually, I believe, be in the tier above.
Not Lemon, just Tate and Watson.
Tate and Watson. Okay, so my apologies. But yeah, going back on Tate, there is a wide delta, I would say, between where you have him and where I have him. And that's also just off the fact that I'm just completely pro Tate. I understand I'd probably be at that stance coming into the video, but he is a guy that I'd be willing to take at that 4 or 5 turn. At the end of the day here, when I look at the prospect grade I had for Neighbors, the prospect grade I had for Carnell Tate, them being, in my opinion, similar prospects with similar draft capital, with similar opportunity, with similar offensive coordinators, with similar offensive question marks, you're having to take Neighbors in the mid third. And the fact that you're getting Tate closer to the late 50s, the early 60s on underdog, maybe even later in some of your home league drafts. Again, I just don't think the price equals the talent level and the opportunity that Tate has at hand. Even if you're lower on the Titans offense, because again, I'm a little bit more bullish. I do think with Daboll, I do think with the natural step Ward can take, this could be more of a fringe top 15 to 20 unit as opposed to a bottom 5 unit. If you're lower on the offense, I understand. But at the same time, this guy can threaten 23 to 25% of the targets as soon as year one.
Yeah, I think Tate is live to Marvin Harrison his rookie year, which is obviously not the same price point. But he is live to do it because he's going to have to play X receiver and because he's going to have to beat number one corners and because Wandale can earn targets and because some of the other things. And I think that the Titans will be a bottom 5 to 10 offense as well.
So the question that I have is, didn't we view that at all basically for Tedrell McMillan last year and he was a top 40 pick in terms of consensus?
Yeah, he was live to Marvin Harrison too.
But that's what I'm saying. It's like the fact that, in my opinion, Tedrell was an even inferior prospect to what I view Carnell Tate as. He went lower in his NFL draft. We had question marks of his offense last year, and yet he was a top 40 pick. So why is Carnell Tate going 20 picks cheaper?
I don't disagree with your premise that wherever Tedrell was going, I don't agree on Neighbors at all. I think that Neighbors was a much better prospect, but on Tedrell specifically, I do agree that wherever Tedrell was going, Tate should probably be going similar to that. I think that's totally fair. I just personally don't think that Tate should go there because both Marvin Harrison and Tedrell weren't great picks at where they were going. And we've learned from that. And that's why the ADP is adjusted.
To a degree, but don't you think that's baked in completely? Like you have him at wide receiver 33. I feel like that's acknowledging that everything's going to go wrong.
Like, let me, where do I have him relative to his ADP? So I'm a little bit lower than his ADP. Yeah, wide receiver 33. Again, the only reason I have him that way is because Quentin Johnston type guys are ahead of him just in pure projection for me. If I was at my point in the draft where I was going, I already have three receivers, I just need a straight up bench upside swing, I would probably take Carnell Tate over Quentin Johnston. It's just, if I'm at a point where I'm in a three wide receiver, two flex, full PPR, deeper league where this guy's a starter, I would rather have Quentin Johnston.
But that's the thing. You could always bank up some, you know, depth later on in the draft. You can always take the 8th, 9th, 10th, 11th. Yeah, I like QJ. Obviously, you have him 21 picks ahead of consensus, so you're very high on QJ. I just think the premise of let me pass on the 4th overall pick for a guy in year 4 I'm expecting to take a leap, I can't get there at all.
He was also look at 26 receiver last year already.
I get that. But again, when I view Carnell Tate as a legitimate 92 overall type of grade, you had him a 90 overall type of grade as a prospect. You had him graded as a top 10 overall player. We both did. Like, that type of prospect profile, as good as QJ is, he doesn't have that ceiling.
He doesn't, but he also wide receiver 26, which is what Quentin Johnston was last year. Yep. I would put that as an upper to high end range of outcomes for Carnell Tate on this terrible of a Titans team with a receiver that is not super athletic, who needs to win with technique, which will take time.
Sure. I view it as a 3-level threat that can command 25% of the targets by week 4. And yeah, you're right. He could potentially start out slow out the gates. We could see Wandale Robinson have the games where he has 12 targets for 68 receiving yards. Like, that'll probably happen.
By week 4 trade targets, Wandale Robinson will be wide receiver 7 in fantasy, and we're going to be telling people to sell high on him.
Yeah. If you're baking in a slow start, sure. If you're saying, hey, I would only rank him at wide receiver 33 because I think I can trade for him at wide receiver 33 price tags by week 4.
On him, to be honest.
Huh?
Pretty much exactly my opinion on him. Why I have him ranked there.
Like, if that's your case, sure. It's just if you're in a league where people know, oh, I'm going to take Carnell Tate at the wide receiver 28 price tag, and I'm not going to panic sell him by week 4. If that's the case, again, I would be willing to get aggressive, because I do think come week 6, week 7 on, we could be looking at a legitimate 16, 17 point game player.
Yeah, I think you're going to have buying windows on him. From a best ball standpoint, you want to rank in there because you feel that way. I don't. I think the Titans are going to stink. I think Tate could have ups and downs, bumps and bruises as a rookie. And I think if I had to set the over-under on Ketterell McMillan's rookie exact production for Carnell Tate, I would probably lean towards the under slightly.
Oh, I'm smashing the over.
Yeah, I know that. I'm saying I would probably lean towards the under.
Yeah, I guess my take, though, is like we said all those negatives for Neighbors, and he was literally a top
Neighbors
7 receiver.
Neighbors and Tate are not the same caliber of prospect. You are the only person.
Even if you had Neighbors above Tate, just the fact of they were both 90-plus grades for you, both top 10 grades for you, like, yeah, even if you say Neighbors was better than Tate, I'm not saying Tate's going to be the wide receiver 7 in fantasy. I just think you have to factor in that he easily has top 12 to 15 appeal down the stretch.
He does. I'm going to buy low on that. And I'm not going to pay.
You're assuming a lot with the league you're in. Maybe
people were trying to buy Ketterell McMillan from me last year thinking the exact same thing.
In your home league?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, like, if you're specifically home, like, let's just say in the flock league, though, and if I or Sammy or Mason draft,
you're going to take him 2.5 rounds before I want to take him. But so that's what I'm saying.
You're not trading for Tate on the low in a league that knows what's going on.
No, I would, because you're going to roster him, first of all.
Probably.
Sammy's a Titans fan and you're a Carnell Tate truther. There's zero chance he's on anybody's team but yours. And I know there's zero chance I would ever buy him from you because you think he's Malik Neighbors, which I adamantly disagree with.
Yeah, which again, that's the take there. Tate at 23 for me. 33, even if you're lower on the start, you have to have him higher than that, bro. Come on.
I might need to move him up just a little bit. I'll probably put him at ADP. He's going around 60. I think that's a fair price for him.
Like, you can't take, like, J-Mo and DJ Moore and guys like that. No, man, no way.
J-Mo, all day.
The reason why I can't take J-Mo over him is because I think Christian Watson's the exact same thesis, except he's a very more proven number one on his offense.
Well, I have Christian Watson ranked over Carnell Tate, too, but... Christian Watson, last year came on down the stretch, 13.24 fantasy points per game, wide receiver 19, second year removed from the ACL tear.
Let me ask you this.
No more Romeo Doubs. Like, a lot of good bull signals here.
Why do we have J-Mo over him? Real talk. Like, honest question. Why do we have Jameson Williams ranked above Christian Watson?
Remembering that Jameson Williams was a legitimate league winner last year?
Okay, but he averaged 12.9 points per game in totality, and you can make the case for Christian Watson having back-weighted production as well.
You want to rank him over him? I'm not going to stop you.
But I'm just asking you as a consensus. Like, people kind of treat Jameson Williams like a round ahead of Christian Watson. To me, there's the same bet. You're betting on, with Jameson Williams, the big play upside in a more insulated offense, while also acknowledging he's not the number one or possibly might not be the number two target, versus Christian Watson's a lesser offensive projection, but he is the clear one, in my opinion.
I have almost 100 more pass attempts projected for the Detroit Lions, and the pace of play is significantly higher. Remember that Drew Petzig, the guy who made Jacoby Brissett throw the ball 45 times a game, is now the offensive coordinator of the Detroit Lions, and Green Bay might throw the least amount of pass attempts in the entire NFL.
Is Bam Knight Jahmyr Gibbs, though?
No, of course not. Like, I'm just saying, they're going to, like, the Lions are a pass-heavy team even without factoring in Drew Petzig. Sure. Like, they were a pass-heavy team before. The Packers have always been very slow-paced, very run-heavy.
But that was a factor last year where Christian Watson outscored Jameson Williams, and he's going
picks later. You're right. But Christian Watson might not do it again. We don't have a large sample of Christian Watson being an excellent receiver. I have a bigger sample of Jameson Williams being a better receiver than Christian Watson.
Yeah, I just frankly think if you're drafting both on the thesis that they're big X wide receivers that can contribute down the field, like, I would rather take the upside shot around later on Christian Watson, knowing that he could be the number one there.
That's totally fine. I would rather take Jameson Williams, but it's totally fine. I just want the Lions. I have a man crush on the team. I will take the Detroit Lion that is on the board at any point in time, whether it's Laporta, St. Brown, Gibbs, or Jameson Williams. I want a Detroit Lion on every single redraft team that I have.
Fair enough. We'll talk about these two rookies right next in conjunction.
We already talked about them. Covered. I don't want to spend more time on them. Jordan Tyson, Mekhi Lemon, they're both rookies in good situations. Yeah. High pass volume for the Saints. Good PPR targets available for the Eagles. We've already gone an hour five. Pittman and Godwin, veteran receivers that can catch 100 passes in the best case scenario, like reasonably.
Maybe.
Like, not quite 100, more like 90, but like...
So
I like both of them as good. This is why I wait on receiver and I take running back early guys like Pittman and Godwin types are available later. That's why I like these two guys.
So you definitely have both these guys higher than I do. Like, if I look at my rankings, Godwin, I have closer to wide receiver 40. And who's the other one?
Pittman.
I have about wide receiver 43. So the two guys missing out for me would be Josh Downs and would be Michael Wilson. Obviously, we don't really have to spend any time on Michael Wilson. There's a big difference in how you project Marv versus Michael Wilson versus how I do. So I'm more on the page of it being a 55-45, 60-40 split, which is why I have him higher. Josh Downs, we're already hearing reports coming out of camp that they do want to increase his usage. They do want to use him around the formation. I understand being a little bit more pessimistic there because we haven't seen in his NFL career, but I also think he's a good enough player to be able to handle it. And if those snap usage reports are real, we could be talking about a top 20 receiver.
Yeah, he kind of just missed the cut here. Yep. Pittman, I have aggressively ranked at 32 overall wide receiver. So, I mean, I don't really even have to say anything else other than that. I think he's a better projection than DK Metcalf. I think he's going to catch more passes than DK Metcalf. I think he's going to probably score more touchdowns than DK Metcalf as well because he fits Rodgers' skill set more. And then Godwin, we've heard some reports that he might be, you know, the favorite to lead the team in targets. Like, I don't believe that. I think Igbuka will be the major number one receiver here. However, Chris Godwin is one of the most accomplished receivers that you're going to find in this territory of the draft. I mean, he goes seventh, eighth, ninth round, like, and you have at least three instances in his career of him being a wide receiver one in fantasy. So I think you can feel pretty confident that if the Bucs are at least the league average offense, then Godwin's going to pay off at ADP. He feels like the Jacoby Myers of this year, like where you take him, you know, ninth round as your second flex and he rips off 13 points per game this year.
Yeah, I could probably capitulate Godwin upwards of wide receiver 37, wide receiver 38, I would say, like right where I have about Michael Wilson's projection. But you're right. I probably should have him above Addison. I should have him above DK at the very minimum, so I can capitulate there. I guess the concern I have with Godwin is we have had the season-ending injuries. He is an older receiver. Like, is his body fully where it was a couple years ago prior to the injury? I guess
that's the second highest on the site, by the way, just FYI.
Which is wild to me because I feel like I'm baking in a lot of the concern there, but also acknowledge, like, if he's healthy, like, I view this target core as a lot more ambiguous than maybe some people do, too.
And he's younger than Terry McLaurin, by the way, who, you know, you're super high on.
Yeah. No, I get that, but also I feel like a lot less injury concerns with Terry McLaurin because last time we saw Godwin on the field, he literally looked hurt.
Right, but nothing that he has right now would be predictive of future injuries.
It's more so just accumulation of hamstring injuries and knee injuries and lower body injuries. Like, a 30-year-old body is not a 26-year-old body, like, in that capacity.
No, but anyways, that is the end of the wide receivers. I mean, I guess top 36 to 40-ish wide receivers that we got through. We broke down the first 12 to 15 in depth in Monday's video, and then we broke down another, you know, probably all the way from late round three to like the seventh, eighth round as far as all these mid-round guys. This is where the money's made, folks. I mean, you you go running back early because you believe running back early is the strategy here, you're going to need to hit on receivers in this territory of the draft. And I think that's going to be the most popular draft strategy this year, is to wait on wide receivers, to go for round four, round five, round six, round seven wide receivers. So trying to find the hits, the guys that are the 13 and 14 point per game receivers, and then maybe the smashes, the last year's George Pickens, Chris Olave types, that's going to be a really crucial part of fantasy drafts this year. So if you guys want all of our bonus content, all of our season pass content for redraft is available right now. That'll be linked down below in the pinned comment. If you want to draft some best ball teams, you can use our best ball tool over on Underdog. And of course, you can use our promo code over on Underdog as well. Promo code FST will get you up to 50% back on your first deposit. And you will also get $50 in bonus entries, a gimme pick to use on MLB, World Cup stuff, whatever you guys are doing there. And of course, you get your practice in for your home leagues. That's the thing that we always talk about as maybe one of the most valuable parts of doing Underdog drafts, is you understand where players are going in sharp formats, especially if your format is a three wide receiver start. You get to understand kind of how valuable receivers can be. But yeah, everything in between. Hopefully you guys enjoyed. Like, comment, subscribe, all that good stuff. But with that being said, peace out. We'll talk to you soon.